The dictionary is very necessary. With the dictionary, you'll see. Yes, you'll really see that it's extraordinary.
Steve, is this your ringtone? Steve Kleinedler joins us right now.
I have not heard this as a lead-in yet.
It's a beautiful song. Beautiful song. That Taylor Swift knows how to spin a song. Yeah. Steve Kleinedler is the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, and he's a lexicographer as well. Steve, for the English language to work, it must constantly be changing, right? There's never a time where there's no new words or no new phrases. Every year there's bunches and bunches of them, correct?
That's true. That's true of every living language, in fact.
And it's good for sales. Let's not forget that, too, right? Because you want the newest, most latest version of the dictionary, of the American Heritage Dictionary. All right, so what has changed? What have been the biggest changes this year from last that you see?
Well, in every year, it depends on what we're paying attention to and what our consultants are telling us. Of course, there's always technology terms coming in. That's pretty much a truism. We go out of our way to look at food and cuisine words just because people like talking about food and cuisine at the end of the year. It's a popular subject. And then there's also updates based on what our usage panel has told us.
Go back to the tech words for just a second. I would imagine that as computers became commonplace and part of everybody's daily activities, that was probably the biggest influx of words of anything over the last 10, 15, or 20 years, right?
The last 10, 20, 30 years. And you know, when you think about even basic words like cut, paste, scroll, that kind of and any type of thing that used to be done physically in a publishing company or by editors, now using these basic words to describe the computer counterpart, that required a lot of revision. This year was a big year because this was the year that we decided to lowercase internet, following the lead of a lot of news agencies, the Associated Press, for example, moved from an uppercase I to a lowercase I, and we followed suit this year as well.
No, I blame the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
The iPad.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, it's always just delete, delete, delete. Steve, what about like the technology? My teenage daughter and her friends, they're just so lazy. They abbreviate everything. Do we see a lot of that?
Well, there are internet abbreviations, but if you recall 100 years ago when telegrams were a very big thing and people dropped prepositions and other small words and everything, you know, all those blah, 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 stop, you know, and just dropping the word. And back then people were complaining, oh, the language is being ruined. Anytime there's a technological innovation, people, you know, worry about the changes. I'm sure when the printing press came out hundreds of years ago, people were making the same type of declamations too. But the English language, as we said, changes. It'll survive this. It's survived abbreviations in the past, and it can live with emoji and everything else.
But you guys do that grudgingly to some extent, don't you? When you have to include those certain words, there's some that you kind of go, well, I guess so many people are using it, we have to include this, right?
Well, when it comes to grudging acceptance, generally we won't enter in our dictionary a term unless we think it's going to stick around for quite a while. We try not to remove things, so we try not to put them in until we're pretty sure they have staying power.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of resources out there for current slang. We tend to catalog it once it's really become entrenched in the language.
Steve, for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, there's 15 finalists, and they each get to pick one person to go in and, like, champion their cause. And I'm wondering, is that how this works? Does somebody go in there and say, hey, the word epitome needs to be in the dictionary now?
Very rarely. I mean, we get a lot of mail and email, believe you me, but it's a good example of that on this list is the word kettle when referring to birders, ornithologists, referring to a group of flying raptors that are ascending in a rising current of warm air. At Houghton Mifflin, which publishes the American Heritage Dictionary, one of the field guide editor mentioned one of her colleagues had been looking up this word and it wasn't there. And so we looked into it and, you know, used her as a kind of a consulting resource on this birding area. And it's a very common term in birding. And so we realized we should probably add it. And you know, that's an instance where someone is like, hey, there's this missing component that you have. But a lot of time people are just calling in or writing in to saying, hey, I made up this word. Can you put it in? Or like, I made up this word, put it in and pay me money. You'd be surprised how many people
really
request money for us to, oh, yeah.
There should be a word for those people.
Yeah.
All right. What about this word? Now, this is a new one for the dictionary, for the American Heritage Dictionary. The word MacGuffin. Now, you guys define it as an object in a work of fiction, especially in a film, whose only purpose is to advance the plot. But I remember Alfred Hitchcock was using this word all the time, MacGuffin, and we're looking at 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Absolutely. He definitely popularized the word. In fact, we have in our etymology at that word, we reference him. He didn't invent the word, but he did popularize it. And this is something that our film and cinema consultant, when going through a related set of words on, I forget what the exact focus was, but they commented, this common word in cinema is missing. You should consider adding it. And we did. And a lot of times when we're, because we're not just adding new words, we're also researching, reviewing. In addition to adding these words and sentences this year, we also revised over 2,000 words, and a lot of it comes from our consultants. So yeah, they said this word is needed, and we added it. And you're right, Hitchcock did popularize that term.
It's Bill, you are a dictionary yourself.
Thank you, Harry. That's very nice of you.
I see you have the word burner in here, an inexpensive cell phone, which usage is paid in advance and can be thrown away. Like, I'm wondering, you mentioned cinema, like if a popular TV show uses a word,
The Wire. Yeah.
Right. And so that's where you get that from.
Well, the Wire didn't invent the word burner, of course, but it did help popularize it. It's been used in other works of crime fiction and science fiction, but it's also used in real life. I mean, you'll see it used in news reports and stuff. Certainly, shows like The Wire bring the word into the forefront, help increase its popularity, so then other people start using it too. So that's one piece of the component. There's very few words that have been added directly from television shows. Yada, yada, yada comes to mind.
From Seinfeld?
There's a couple Seinfeldisms. But it isn't all that often. It's usually that in conjunction with the ubiquity of being used in the pop culture lexicon.
I don't see, Steve, I don't see this on the list, but I will quickly explain the phrase double down. Now, as a degenerate gambler, former degenerate gambler, this was a blackjack term.
Oh,
you would double down.
Good hand.
But now it's become a political term.
Both have been around for quite some time, and in sports and gambling is, of course, a very productive way of bringing terminology into the language. There's a lot of sports terminology, a lot of betting terminology. I mean, you know, just poker terms, as poker's influences have risen in the last decade, you'll see poker terminology coming in. Of course, I'm blanking on everything right at the moment. I even play cards, but it is a very common mechanism by which terms enter the language.
Steve Kleinedler is our guest, the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. We'll take a quick break and then we'll come back with more changes to the dictionary that have been made from last year to this. If you want to jump in with any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Harry Tynowitz in for Wendy on WGN.
Look words up. Open up the book. Look words up. You know where to look.
It's Bill Leff. It's Harry Tynowitz sitting in for Wendy. Steve Kleinedler joins us right now. He's the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary, talking about the changes of this upcoming dictionary from all the previous years. Several people have texted us various questions about words. Steve, what about this one, bigly, which is most commonly used by our chief executive officer? Is that even really a word, or is that something he just came up with?
Well, my fellow linguistic colleagues at the time, you can find information on this on the internet with good searching. They did phonological analysis, and it does turn out he was saying big league. But that said, if you look at the Oxford English Dictionary, you'll see that the use of bigly as an adverb goes back at least a century, possibly more. Is it that common? No. Is it current in the lexicon? Not really. But in this case, the term did exist, and phonologically, it is very likely that he was actually saying big league until it took on a life of its own. Perhaps now bigly is the word of the of the moment for him. So, but With acoustic analysis, you can make a lot of determinations like that.
He's on TV all the time. I would imagine that he'd be a source you guys would look at. Is there a word, there are words that didn't quite make the cut this year that he was throwing out there, like Covfefe or Mar-a-Lago?
Oh, well, like Covfefe. No, I mean, that's the type of word that we might look at humorously, but really not consider adding. He, like many politicians, bring words into the vernacular or pronunciations. We've talked about the word pronouncing nuclear as nuclear for quite some time, which a number of presidents have done, for example. So most of his, these things like Covfefe or other misspellings in tweets are data samples, but very few are likely to actually get included. And again, they really took off and everyone started using them non-ironically.
Since we're talking about the political bend on these words, snowflake always used to just mean a flake of snow, but now it means something a lot more. That's one that has changed. It's now a person who is considered to be overly sensitive or too easily offended, especially as a result of believing himself or herself to be unique or special. Did this change just happen, Steve, or is it something that's been gradual?
It's been gradual. This term has been around for probably the better part of a decade, but it really took off in the last year and a half. You see it used in the political discourse a lot. You'll see it in political reporting, in news articles about either the right or the left. And so even though it's been around for a while, it's kind of been on that low radar thing. And in the last 16 months or so, it's really taken off. And therefore, we figured it warranted getting included.
It seems like it's used in a very negative, derogatory way, too. Anytime you hear it on any of the cable news channels, it's thrown in as a slam.
Yes, it's definitely used pejoratively, which we try to encapsulate in the way that we word the definition. You're using it to refer to someone that you think is being too sensitive. It is definitely used in a pejorative way.
Do you have like a section for men and women to call their spouses when they get very angry?
Not a special section per se, but that sounds like an interesting blog post.
I think so. And Steve, how does one gravitate towards where you are? You know, being in charge of figuring out, hey, that's a word, that's not a word. How did you make your left turn into this world?
Well, Chicago has a lot to do with that. I lived there back in the day. My undergraduate degree is at Northwestern, and I was a linguistics major, and one of my professors started giving me freelance work, and I ended up going to grad school at the University of Chicago to continue my studies in linguistics. And one thing led to another, and I started up at the AHD in 1997 and
Wow.
moved out to Boston at that point.
What a story.
Yeah.
630 says, what about EVS, EVS? My daughter says it all the time. For people who don't know, that's teen speak for whatever. You know, you just say EVS.
Yeah, there's EVS, there's also WEVS, there's also stuff like OBVS, for OBS, for obvious, this type of shortening. It's, again, very this type of process is very common. It's very well caught in online dictionaries that capture the slang of the moment, which is great. If newspaper columnists and the like started using it and it became ubiquitous and hung around, it would be something that we would probably add as well. But it's TeamSpeak is a very robust way to introduce vocabulary into the vernacular, and sometimes it jumps over and becomes used by everyone instead of a special group, in this case teenagers.
Bill, I was with my daughter and her two friends at the Hawks game last night.
Yeah.
And they had this like relay race, hockey teams on
sure.
skates, and one of them was a girl, and she beat the guy that she was racing against to give a victory to the blue team.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, hey, there's a girl skater, and they all three, yay queen.
Yay queen?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
I think it's like to acknowledge when a girl does something great against a guy. I'm not even.
Yay or yeah?
Yeah queen.
Yeah queen.
You. Yeah queen. See how out of it I am?
Okay. You'll also see it with S's, YASS. Yes.
But then I won't know what to do, Steve, when the queen does something extraordinary. I won't know how to address that.
Right. Or the group queen.
Right.
You know, they got a new singer now.
No, it's too tough. It's too tough.
Well, yeah, all children have a way of talking so that their parents don't know exactly what they're talking about. I think, you know, that goes back through the decades for sure. Our parents probably didn't know what we were talking about when we said something was tubular.
Right. I still don't. I'll be honest with you. Several people want to know by way of text if the word ain't is ever acceptable. It's in the dictionary, right, Steve?
Oh, ain't has been in the dictionary for quite some time. Webster's added it in the early 60s to Webster's Third. The American Heritage Dictionary originally got its start as a reaction to that, but of course ended up entering it as well. If you go online to our dictionary at ahdictionary.com and look up the word ain't, you'll see a fairly lengthy usage note about the public perception about it, why it's considered non-standard, where it gets used, that sort of thing. So, it you know, much like the word irregardless, it is in the dictionary, and whether or not you choose to use it depends on whether and how you, for example, want to be perceived. If the company that you keep looks askance at it, you will give it a second thought, and if they don't care, you might use it with a plum.
I can't tell you how many times when I was in grade school, I'd have a teacher who say, if you use the word ain't, you're not going to pass, or we'll put you out in the hall. You can't be part of the class if you use ain't. And the argument was always, but it's in the dictionary. A kid would always say, I'll show you in the dictionary. It's in there. It always became a little bit of an issue.
Yep. I remember the old saying, ain't a word because ain't in the dictionary. But of course it was.
Right. That should be a song too, Steve. I don't know if you're a songwriter, but that would be a very pretty song. Jeff has a question for you. Hey, Jeff, go ahead. You're talking to Steve Kleinedler, executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. What was your question?
Hey, do you ever delete words out of the dictionary?
We do, but not that often. We try to, again, not put them in until we think they're going to stay around. The terminology that we do delete tends to be obsolescent. I think we deleted cassette memory at one point, which is you can still get from the compound parts, but in terms of technological stuff, was less important. In the late 1900s, that is actually true. Yeah. Around 1999 or so, we almost considered deleting Chad, because who uses punch cards anymore? But at the time of the staff meetings, we're like, well, I know punch cards are still used in some elections. Literally, we thought that. So we kept it. And then lo and behold, a year later, Chad is on everyone's list.
Huge. Gigantic. Jeff, thanks for your phone call.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Steve, would you be the world's greatest Scrabble partner?
I would not. My colleague Ben Zimmer, who writes to the Wall Street Journal and other things, he's actually on a crossword puzzle cruise right now. He would be much more a formidable opponent than I. A lot of it has to do with memorizing word lists. Some of these Scrabble players, they just spend days and days just memorizing word patterns, which is something I have not done. I'm a good player, but I'm certainly not at the professional level that some of these players are.
Not good enough to be on a Scrabble cruise. That's crazy.
No.
When it comes to Scrabble Cruise, Steve would be obsolescent.
Yes, he would. Barb's on the line. Barb, go ahead. Did you have a question for Steve?
Hi, Nate. Well, I have a comment. You're talking about words changing and adding definitions to them. In the, I have an 1850 Webster's Dictionary, and in that dictionary, the word upset has one. Whoop! Where'd it go? Look again. The only definition for the word upset is to overturn, to overthrow, to overset as a carriage.
Yeah, and that's it.
And overturn and overthrow as of a carriage. So the current definition is considerably, or definitions are considerably more numerous. Can't talk.
But Steve, I bet that's a big part of it. When you say you have to revise words, you have to keep adding more and more usages for those words, right?
That's absolutely correct. You know, words come into the language with a specific meaning, and over time, they acquire new meanings. And of course, upset does refer to knocking something over. I'm checking right now in the OED for the year when this entered, which is like 1440. Wait, no, that's too upset to knock over. It's kind of really long to become overturned. 1799, and I'm looking in the print edition right now, so the online edition might even be more.
This is so bizarre, but I actually know a little something about the way that upset got used to describe when somebody who's not supposed to win wins something.
Yeah.
There was a racehorse named Upset, and he was a long shot, and this other horse was supposed to win this horse race for sure. And Upset won, and that became the terminology
from then on.
Yeah, like, you know, like, oh man, like he trumped it.
I'm like most etymologies, I'm almost certain that's a folk etymology. I'm looking in the OED right now. That sense of
how dare you
throw into mental disorder goes back to 1805. Much like my colleague at Merriam-Webster, Corey Stamper, wrote this great book, Word by Word, and in it she talks about how people insist that the word posh comes from port outbound, starboard home, or whatever, which is completely...
It's not true.
It is just not the case.
Yeah.
And there's documentation, but people will swear upside and down when they do so. When it comes to folk etymologies, people are very fiercely protective of
sure.
these things they've heard, but they're
and they should be.
Incorrect.
Barb, thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciated. Steve, great to talk to you again. Steve Kleinedler, the executive editor of the American Heritage Dictionary. Where can people find you, Steve, if they want to know more?
Right. So our online dictionary is at ahdictionary.com.
Yeah.
The book, The American Heritage Dictionary, is available at any brick-and-mortar bookstore or your favorite online bookstore. And we're also an app on the Android and iTunes platforms.
Excellent. Have a great new year. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Okay, that's Steve. Harry, I know that you found evidence to the contrary, huh?
Yeah. Man of War lost one time in his life. It was 1919, the only horse ever to defeat. Man of War ran 21 times.
Yeah.
He won 20 races.
Yeah.
The only horse to ever beat him was Upset.
Interesting. A quick break, some news, and then Eric Zorn joins us. It's Bill and Harry and for Wendy on WGN.